You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, Utes fall short to the Gators down in Gainesville, and we're looking ahead to Utah versus Southern Utah University. If I got that name right. I don't even know anymore.
Oh, it's not Utah Tech?
That's the other one, I think.
Oh, that's the old Dixie. Okay.
I'm Cameron, and we got Scott.
What is up?
And Ryan is... He's like the Utes. He's stranded somewhere.
He's slow to arrive. Just like Utah's defense.
Oh, hopefully we get Ryan on before we wrap up this episode. So the Utes fall to the Gators 29-26 in heartbreaking. Oh. Exactly how I felt Saturday after that pick.
Oh, man. I just can't get over it. That was such a frustrating loss. It was there. It was there for the taking. Not only, I mean, they should have won by two scores, guys.
It really shouldn't
should
have been
not
that close.
Have come down to that.
I mean, two trips into the red zone on the six within the 6 yard line, and you come out with 0 points. You're not going to win ball games doing that, especially against an SEC team
on the road. I mean, it's just dumb mistakes, and it obviously we'll jump into it and kind of go through it all. But I mean, the thing about it, there were some really good things in that game. The offense did some really good things, and the defense had their moments. They looked good in moments, and they looked really bad in moments. So just some inconsistencies across the board, but this close to coming out of Gainesville with a W, which would have been a game changer.
I think that's like the thing that sucks the most. I mean, not only is Utah losing, but now it's the whole narrative of the Pac-12 can't beat other P5 teams. And it's like Utah had all that weight on their shoulders, not only for their program, but for the conference with, you know, everyone's talking playoffs for them, and I know that's still in reach. It's not, the door isn't shut on that completely. But man, I just felt like the weight of the world on that program after the game.
And the problem is that narrative's not going anywhere until those games start going in the Pac-12's favor.
And consistently.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, the Pac-12 could be done before that narrative ever changes. So. Yeah, unfortunate. A great opportunity with so many eyes on the Utes. Like you mentioned, so much kind of pressure and expectations. And one pass away from completely changing that narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Utah falls to 13 in the polls. Florida goes from unranked up to 12th.
Yeah.
Which I have no problem with them being ranked ahead of us. They just beat us, right? Mm-hmm. But that is quite a jump for any program to go from unranked to top 15. But I think that also shows a lot of respect for Utah, right? And people realizing around the country, hey, that was a quality win from Florida. Florida looked better than advertised, better than people expected. And so I think that jump with Florida speaks a lot to Utah and how good of an opponent. I mean, I'm watching SportsCenter last night. Scott Van Pelt says, hey, my mind hasn't changed on Utah. They're still a good team. They're still an elite team, and they're still going to have a chance for the playoff. And so that is the narrative. I know we're all bummed, you know, us Ute fans who follow the team so closely and live and die on everything. There is still a chance for that playoff. It's going to be tough now, but I think if anything, the Utes have maybe woken up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I think the biggest thing to take away from it as a Utah fan is this is not losing to San Diego State. This is not losing to the team down south like what Utah did last year. This is losing by 3 points to a blue blood program, nationally respected. And like what you're just pointing out, Scott, to go from unranked and jump everybody up to 12, it's not doom and gloom. And I kind of got a lot of that from Utah fans on social media after the game. It sucked. I know. It wasn't fun, but the sky is not falling. There's still a lot to play for. Still, everything that Utah wants in front of them is still achievable.
Oh, very much so. I think where U fans are coming from is it's so easy to look through that game and pick out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things. If they just went in our direction, they went our way, the game's completely different.
I know 2 things just off the top of my head, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it. Tavion Thomas falling on the goal line. And then the pick.
Can I rescind my Tavion Thomas breakout player of the year award last year?
For last year? I'll take it off your hands. I'll claim it. All right.
No, let's not put that in there.
Let's jump into this game, looking at the offense. Okay. Cam Rising throws the pick. We all know it. The pick heard around the world. Cam, first half, a little questionable.
Not a little. He was woof. I mean, he was not good.
He was not accurate in that first half.
I mean, even his touchdown pass to Keithy looked weird. It's like he had this weird release. I mean, people were speculating on Twitter, is the ball really wet? Is it sticking to his fingers? What's the deal? Because he just had this look about him where it's like the ball wouldn't come out of his hand, and it just kept causing it to go low or behind the receiver. And even that pass to Keithy for that went for the first score of the game, not great, but he had guys open early on in that game. One on third down that would have led to a first down, just completely throws it behind the wide receiver. I'm not sure. I mean, I started wondering, is he injured? Is the shoulder? You know, he took some hits in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, is the shoulder not? Did he just ding it? Is something wrong here? Because he did not look himself. Obviously, that changed in the second half. He looked a lot better, but still don't know what was going on early there.
No, and I know it's very easy for us to come onto a podcast, you know, 2 days after the game, you know, 2 or 3 days after the game, and kind of nitpick after seeing highlights. You know, we record the games, we go back and watch it. But even the second half, as much praise I want to give Rising, you know, he did miss a couple guys. Like Bailey was wide open in the end zone on that first play at the end of the game. And this is things like that kind of hit you in the gut. But I Rising, full credit, marching the team down to the goal line to set up their opportunity to win the game speaks volumes to him. And not a lot of players in college football with a 1:30 can go into the swamp and march down.
So, I mean, he essentially did it in a minute because they had 28 seconds left on the clock when he threw the pick, right? On that snap. First and goal at the 6, 28 seconds left. And that was impressive. Now, granted, they did waste two timeouts on that drive. And some of those were just little play calls where I'm like, what are we doing here, right? You're throwing a little, just a little...
Yeah, at that point, you just got to throw the ball away and kill the clock.
Yeah, right? I mean, because you're just wasting a timeout. Mm-hmm. And those timeouts could have been valuable at first and goal on the 6 where you could potentially run the ball and spread them out, run it, and see if you can catch them napping. I know the announcers were talking about that quite a bit. But it did just surprise me because the one thing Cam could not do in that situation, throw an interception.
Force it. Oh.
Throw it into the fans. Throw it anywhere. Just do not let Florida catch it. And, I mean, at the very least, if he throws it away, it's not there. You've got third down. Third down doesn't work. Okay, you got a chip shot field goal from Noyce, who looked pretty dang good.
Yes, he did.
Throughout that game. And then you're going, worst case scenario, you're going to overtime. So just... I'm not sure what Rising saw, and because he was dead.
He stared,
yes,
Kincaid down on that, and you can't do that at this level, and especially an opponent like Florida is. You can't stare your receiver down, and that's exactly what he did.
Well, there's an angle from the back of the end zone, directly line of sight for Cam, and as soon as he snaps it, he looks right there, And obviously the linebackers read his eyes and jumped that route and they made a great play. When it happened live, I just thought, okay, please, hopefully he dropped that and they didn't catch it. Let's see a replay. Of course, ESPN never gave us a replay because ESPN wanted everything to happen in Gator favor throughout that game, which was interesting. But with that being said, again, a lot of positives.
Mm-hmm.
Great drive, get yourself in that position. To me, it was so uncharacteristic of Rising in that situation to make that pass. Because if you remember, three plays earlier, almost threw a pick too, to the linebacker who dropped it. You know, so it was just, I'm not quite sure. He looked so good in moments and just shaky.
Well, and then I was kind of thinking about that. Has Cam been in that situation before at Utah? Like, I couldn't remember a game.
Maybe we should have brought Barnes in. Barnes proved he could do it in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Barnes for that situation.
You know, again, not trying to knock on Cam because he played a heck of a game. 22 completions on 32 attempts, 216 yards and the touchdown. And really, you know, as we were saying, led that offense on that final drive and set the team to be able to even have a chance at winning at the end. So it looks like Ryan's flight finally made it in.
I was stranded with the players and coaches.
Ryan,
now everyone wants to know, did Witt abandon the team?
No, I saw him in the airport. He was there.
I should say BYU fans want to know if he abandoned them.
Of course they do.
Good to have you here, Ryan.
It's good to be here. Sorry I'm joining late.
So now looking at the rushing attack for Utah, Tevian Thomas led the way, 23 attempts for 115 yards, one TD for him.
And one costly fumble.
Oh.
And just like we all predicted, Chris Curry as his backup with the second most attempts of the night.
Yeah, any of us saw that happening.
Definitely did not see that coming.
From Glover.
No, I was surprised Glover didn't play. But I was kind of pleasantly surprised at the way Curry ran the ball. When he ran it last year, he didn't do much, but he picked up a couple of first downs.
No, he did. I mean, he only averaged 2.6 yards per carry. But, I mean, yeah, he had some good runs, and the fact that the coaches obviously thought highly enough to put him in that situation and that early in the game. I mean, he got more rushing attempts in Bernard, and like we said, nothing from Jalen Glover, which really kind of surprised me a little bit. But I mean, Tavion, yeah, nothing. I mean, again, we didn't get much from the run game and from anybody in that first half until a little change was made, and they came out in the second half and just kind of the O-line dominated that second half.
Oh yeah,
both in the run game and pass protection. Which is good to see. You know, obviously that was such a concern for all Ute fans after the start of last year. Are these guys going to take a month to get ready to play?
Well, in the first half, I think there was some question mark because the few times they ran it, there wasn't great success. It was just, everything was bottled up and they couldn't break through. But yeah, the second half, they did their thing and really took over the game.
Well, in part because Lumea slides out to right tackle.
And they bring in Mokafisi.
And then they ran behind Mokafisi a lot in that second half, which is interesting. Mokafisi was not, I mean, he was a walk-on. And now he's in the starting lineup, it looks like.
Didn't Lumea get hurt towards the end of the game?
I don't know. Did he?
Well, he was down on one knee.
He might have just,
I thought he just kind of just praying.
Cramped. Maybe that's what he's just praying.
It's just Tebowing in Gator Stadium.
Maybe they could use a little bit more of those at the end of the game. But going back to the running back, so Tavion trips on nothing. Could have walked in the end zone behind Ryan's boy. Completely blew up that side.
There was nobody in front of him. I mean, he would have waltzed in.
But then he totally made up for it on fourth down by fumbling.
And then typical Tavion fashion.
Oh, that's frustrating, man.
I think that is the frustrating part because last year, you know, Utah, it seems like the last couple of years, Utah struggled in the red zone. And when
I don't think it's the last couple of years. I think it's the last couple of decades. Okay.
And it seemed like last year, Tavion really...
Well, okay, before we go, last year was not that bad in the red zone. They were actually pretty good last year. I think
because of Thomas.
Once Thomas caught his stride.
Was a great band-aid over the red zone woes of the Utah offense.
Again, like what? Game three, game four, he kind of caught his stride. You know, stopped fumbling the ball. And yeah, I mean, obviously he was third in FBS in touchdowns scored last year in 21, a Utah record.
That's because every time they went in the red zone, they could give him the ball and he could punch it in.
Right.
That's what they were missing on Saturday night.
But I still think there's this, I don't know if it's stigma is the right word, but there's this thing that for several years, when it's third and short or fourth and short, we struggle to pick it up sometimes.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know if it's a combination of, you know, play calling. Either we're too exotic or we're too vanilla and we do exactly what the defense expects us to do. Or if it's just a lack of execution in those situations. But from a team that prides itself on running the ball, who's consistently at the top of the league as far as rushing the football, it is crazy to me how often we get stuffed on third down and short and fourth down and short.
Yeah, look, over 200 yards rushing as a team. And then
233.
But you can't punch it in from the 1 yard line.
Well, technically, Rising did. And the Pac-12 officials, shocker, missed it. Kyle Whittingham missed it. Whoever's upstairs that's supposed to radio down to Kyle and say, hey, looks like he scored, challenge it, should be fired. I mean, because it was pretty clear live that he got in. And you see every replay from all these angles. His knee was not down. He crossed the plane.
He did. My only argument to that is, would they have overturned it? I don't know.
At least it would have been reviewed.
Yeah.
And we would have said, okay, there wasn't enough there to turn it, so it is what it is. But
and it gives you a little bit more time before fourth down. Maybe if it's essentially another timeout while they're reviewing.
You do get another timeout.
Maybe they change up the play call. You know, who knows? Who knows if anything changes?
Maybe they run the play that 2-point conversion was.
Oh, that was awful.
Oh, gosh. Can we just say why?
It's good why? It was fumbled because
he would have gone blown up.
He would have gotten blown the up.
I don't get why Lugwood likes to get so cute in those situations.
I was speechless when I saw it. I was like, what on earth is, what are we doing?
I kind of wonder if it was like a read option for Bernard.
No. As soon as he got it, it was shuffling it forward.
Cause I mean, if Bernard keeps it, Keithy's there for that block.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so now since we're talking 2-point conversion.
Controversy.
Did you like it?
I did. Every decision Kyle made in that game, I 100% liked. I liked when they kicked the field goals. I liked being aggressive on the fourth down. I liked going for two. The one didn't do you any good.
Oh, yes, it would have at the end of the game. A field goal wins you the game.
But maybe Florida goes for two.
Maybe.
And so you're still still up by three.
Maybe you stop it though.
There's all these what ifs.
Oh, there's a million what ifs in this game.
You can say because they went for two.
No, but the whole didn't point get it. Is
that's
it was,
what caused them.
That was so early in the second half to go for two.
It was like, late in the third.
I get his reasoning, right? I get it. Let's get up a full touchdown.
Oh, I totally understand why he did it. And I don't think it was early. I don't necessarily agree with
they
the
scored,
decision.
They scored and went up by five at that point, right?
Yep.
And you kick a PAT and you go up six.
Again,
what does that do for you?
You're still only You're still only in the third quarter.
But it does. The game plays out. The game can play out completely differently.
You're wrong here, Cam. No. You just have to accept it.
No, I'm just. I think for one, usually I'm the more
conservative
one and would have kicked, but I actually liked that situation. What if the defense makes a play? No one even talks about that decision, right? The defense stops them from marching down and scoring a touchdown to go up by three.
Oh yeah, well, we're gonna get to the defense for sure. I'm just saying, did you like the call? You liked it.
I didn't.
Ryan's on the fence, no, as no, always. Ryan's not going to give you an
I
answer.
I didn't disagree with the call.
I told you.
No, I said I didn't disagree with it. How is that sitting on the
because
fence?
Because you're going to say, I didn't disagree with it.
But I disagreed with the play call.
Kids, settle down over there.
Okay, so you didn't. I agree with you. I didn't like the play call.
What got you into that position was big boy football. You ran the ball down their throat, and then you get tricky on the 3 yards.
So just to clarify, you didn't like the quadruple reverse.
I didn't like it. I'm raising my hand.
No, the play call was awful. In the moment, I was thinking, let's just kick the field goal. I know being up six is not a great position to be in. Trust me, I get that. But I just thought it was a little early in the game to be chasing the points. Because you still had a lot of game left. Let's see what happens, right? And I didn't love it. But I've been critical of Witt not being aggressive, right? And so I do like the aggressive nature. We're on the road. We got to go for this. We've got to do it. So, you know, I can't be too critical of that, obviously. But I just, in the moment, I thought, wait, why are we doing this so soon?
I also like the confidence that the coaching staff gives to the offense. Like, hey, you guys can go get this. And I think that builds their confidence. And I think after watching them go down the first possession and march down there, unfortunately don't come up with a score, then get the ball back and go down and score, you're seeing that you're able to move the ball at will. Yeah. So why not tell your team, go get those 2 points?
Yards is not the best barometer as far as just, you know, effectiveness of an offense, but over 400 yards of offense, the majority of that came into the second half, right? Where every series they were moving the ball. And I mean, I think that goes to your point as far as giving the team confidence. I don't know. Still not sold on that 2-point conversion at that point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can second guess about this. Blowing a bunch of timeouts too.
On dumb play calls that don't get you any yardage and you stay in bounds.
Yeah.
On that last drive, which we kind of alluded to, but you were late for.
We've already broken that down.
But no, I mean, offensively, Keithy was trying to win this game by himself.
That guy can do whatever he wants to do. He can get open whenever he wants to get open. And I'll tell you, the pass was spot on, that seam pass he caught, but that catch was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. He set a career high for catches in that game.
And then he cramped, and I was like, please be a cramp.
I thought he tore his hamstring for
so
a second.
I know. But no, he was so good. But as good as he was, okay, and this goes back to the last play of the game. Florida knew it was going to a tight end.
Yeah, you go to the wide receivers.
And he threw to the double-covered one.
You got to get
Kincaid was double-covered. He was bracket-covered all night long.
Oh, there's like three guys right there on Kincaid, I swear.
And again, those are your strengths. So, yes, you want to utilize your strength, but
do you have so many other weapons out there?
You've got to show that you've got confidence in those guys. Solomon Enos has been in this program like 10 years. All right? Vele, you know you can rely on Vele.
Should we look at it? So Vele had 3 receptions. Solomon had 2. Money Parks had 1.
Everything else
went to tight ends.
And a running back.
And Bernard.
Did you see the, I think it was the play, was that first down when when Rising threw it out of the back of the end zone because he didn't have anybody.
Yeah.
That was a solo.
Vele was wide open and he missed him. Rising was looking to the left side of the field and he was kind of over.
Because he was staring down his tight ends.
He was wide open.
Rising likes his tight ends, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, we're up against a break. I do want to talk about Bernard when we come back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, we're back. Still talking about the offense from Utah's loss to Florida. Bernard played a heck of a game, and I love Bernard out of the backfield, you know, catching the ball. We saw it in the Rose Bowl. They did it again this game with 5 receptions. But they need to kind of get the other backs blocking in pass protection. Because it seems like every time they were going to throw the ball, it was always Bernard in there to pick up the blitz.
Because he's the best run blocker.
He is the best run blocker. And I'm not knocking him
for it.
Or not
run blocker. But
or pass blocker.
Pass blocker, yeah.
It's going to get too predictable.
Well, the announcer said as such. On that last drive, you bring Bernard in, you know they're passing, right? If you bring somebody else in, do you sneak? I mean, the fact that Tavion's our starting running back, but we don't trust him to block baffles me, right?
Mm-hmm.
This dude came back to Utah. He forego the NFL draft last year to come back to Utah. Dude, if you can't block, you're not going to the NFL, period. So
that's why he came back.
I mean, yes, they need to get a little more unpredictable as far as their personnel, their sets.
Yes.
And that stuff's going to come. I mean, this is game one, right? Where they're still probably trying to feel out some things and see kind of how everybody's fitting in.
But see, I think you do that stuff against SUU. You don't do that stuff against Florida.
Well, guess what? Florida was first on the schedule.
I know,
Cam.
But that's why you need to be prepared. And we talk.
Can we flip flop this? These games.
We want to test something first.
A mulligan. No, but I mean, you hear all these things out of fall camp that Utah went pretty light on contact
because they wanted to keep everybody healthy.
I get that to a point, but when your first game is Florida, you can't do that.
I'm not arguing with you.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm stating why they did it. They wanted guys healthy, which makes sense, but we paid the price. We had guys healthy, and those healthy guys stunk because they couldn't get the job done.
Oh, I can't wait till we get in the defense and tackling.
But to me, where it is, we know what we have in the tight ends. They're going to be special all year. But what did we say last week? These tight ends are going to get all of the attention from the defense. Do you think USC is going to let Keithy go for 9 catches and 100 plus? No, they're not going to let him. They're not going to let Kincaid. And they're going to say one-on-one coverage for Vele, one-on-one coverage for Solomon Ennis. We don't think you guys will.
One-on-one coverage for Jalen Dixon.
Oh, wait. Not only do we not think these wideouts will beat us, we don't think they'll even throw to them.
That's exactly what happened to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game when Utah lost to Oregon. Right? They double-teamed the tight ends the entire game and forced Utah to go to their wideouts, and Utah never did.
Cam Rising must have no confidence in these wideouts. I mean, you saw it today.
I don't know if it's Chad. Is it
Chad,
confidence?
Chad Bumpus, the wide receiver coach, said he needs to get a mentality with his wideouts that they demand the ball. They're going to go out and they are going to produce and they are going to demand the ball from the quarterback. Now, what that means behind the scenes, I don't know. Does that mean Cam doesn't have confidence in him? Is the scheme so much that Ludwig is so in love with these tight ends that everything is focused on them?
I think a lot has to do that because when the game gets tight, you're going to go to where you're most comfortable with as a play caller, as a player, and where this offense is designed for the tight ends, and rightfully so.
But if you become that predictable, you see what happens. You see the result. Now, there are some talented football teams in the Pac-12. We're probably not going to see the caliber of athletes the rest of the season.
Called that out. Winningham said this is probably the best talent that we'll see all year.
Well, and I mean, USC's got some great skill players, but they don't have the overall talent right now on their roster that Florida does. Florida's a top 10 recruiting class year in and year out.
Yes.
And there's no doubt about it. That is the most athletic and probably the biggest and the fastest team we will see, including Oregon, including USC. So right there, things look good for Utah moving forward. But the problem is you've got to get these wide receivers involved in the game. Either we're recruiting dud after dud after dud at wide receiver, and these guys aren't good, or they're capable and they can make plays, and we just refuse to trust them and throw the ball to them.
I think that's why we're seeing a revolving door at wide receiver coach, as we did for offensive coordinator for a number of years. I think Witt's finally landed on a guy he trusts at offensive coordinator. But he probably saw a deficiency in the wide receiver, or at least in the coaching of the wide receivers. And it needs to be elevated to get where they want to go.
Well, and obviously we're not coaches. We're not in practice. We don't see what Money Parks is doing. We didn't see Cope.
We didn't see Jalen Dixon.
We didn't see Jalen.
Who was listed as a starter.
Did Jalen Dixon miss the flight or something? I don't know.
Well, Vele ran his play.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He must be in the doghouse again. But it boggles my mind that these guys can't make plays. They can make plays. They're just never given the opportunity to do so. And yes, every coach is going to go to his strength, which is tight end right now. And that's great. Majority of the throws, if open, should go towards those guys. But they're not going to be open if you never throw to a wideout.
Well, and the other thing is, how do you keep your wideouts
engaged.
Yeah. You know, if they're blocking 99% of their reps, chances are they're not going to be that engaged.
I'm convinced Solomon Enos is only at Utah because somebody's holding him here against his will. I mean, the dude never gets the ball thrown to him, and he keeps coming back.
We predicted he was going to transfer for 3 years, and he's still here.
And Money Parks, right? Kyle Winningham couldn't talk enough about him in spring camp. Fall camp. Well, we're going to see it. Something's got to change there.
Well, maybe this was an eye-opening experience for all of them, including Ludwig, that maybe the game plan was to go in there. Maybe they thought they saw something that they could utilize the tight ends, and that was their game plan. And in the end, it backfired. I mean, lost by 3 points in a hostile environment. It didn't completely fall apart.
No.
But
and again, that's just a small. We're not saying you got to throw the ball 60 times a game, right? We're saying just incorporate the wideouts a little bit more, because guess what? I don't think there was a defender on the field on that last play who was covering a wideout. Thought this is going to my guy. They just knew it,
mm-hmm.
Right?
And why not on second down, to be safe, throw a fade to the 6'5 Vele? If he doesn't catch
or
it,
Solomon
you get third down.
Enos has good height, too.
Yeah.
But I think that's where you separate, you know, the good teams from the great teams, is that they can make those adjustments. They can be more than one dimensional in situations like that.
And man, I myself am probably being too critical right now, because I think this is game one. I think you're going to see some changes. I think you're going to see more guys get involved, obviously, as the season goes on. I just think, man, this offense is so good. Imagine how good it could be if you're spreading the ball out across the field, making all 11 defenders defend.
You know what's going to happen is this week, all the receivers are going to have like 12 catches. We're going to say, see?
Take that, Utah Tech. All right, that'll do it for our review of the offense. Let's jump in the defense. Before we do that, let's take a quick break. All right, shifting over to the defensive side of the ball. I think Kyle said 27 missed tackles in the game.
That is correct, my friends.
Not good, my friends. Not good at all.
I don't even think you want to have 27 at the end of the season. And I think 26 of those came in the first quarter. I mean, our tackling in it got a little better as the game went on, a little. But that first half, I could not believe how bad our tackling was. I mean, Van Fillinger, he could have sacked the guy twice, and he just like goes and tries to like lay on him. Well, bounces, slides off of him.
It was almost like he was greased up.
Ellis, both of them had him like wrapped up in the backfield, and all of a sudden they just like let him go like a greased pig, and he just took off.
Yeah, it was tackling, and again that statement from RJ Hubert today sounds like they had a practice that probably involved a lot of tackling.
No, but a lot of credit, you know, to Anthony Richardson. Kyle compared him to Cam Newton.
He sure looked every bit the part,
both running and throwing.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, and he had some inaccurate throws, which we kind of talked about, right?
Yeah.
Force him to throw.
But their game plan was good in the fact that most of their design throws were short.
Sure.
They knew he could connect.
Yeah, exactly. They put him in positions where he could make throws.
And he wasn't wearing the Velcro glove. The ball was actually coming out of his hand, but... no, he looked good. I mean, and people are already stating that he's probably going to, you know, stays healthy, has a good year. He'll be a Heisman finalist just because of what he's able to do, his highlight reels and all of that. And I think Utah saw that firsthand. I mean, when that second touchdown they had, he ran for, 50 some odd yards. I mean, he gets out of the pocket. Dude is fast.
There's no one there.
No, it's just.
He ran the whole field.
It was not good, Bob, but it's also never great when your safeties are your leading tacklers. That means your D-line and linebackers really aren't getting the job done.
No, Utah's front seven was terrible on defense. Like, not to be rude, but they were not good.
And I sat here last week and said how dominant this defensive line is going to be. Because quite honestly, with as much experience as we have, back,
they should be.
I am surprised.
And they may be in this conference, but in the SEC, not so much.
Junior Tufuna, one tackle total. Assisted and solo, one tackle. Are you serious?
Does it say how many missed tackles?
Tennessee Pututau, the other starting tackle, two total tackles. You know, I mean, honestly, I thought Miki Sugataraga, I thought he looked the best at the defensive end position.
Connor O'Toole got some reps and looked really good.
Yeah, Jonah Ellis looked good at times, too. But there were some issues with the read option, with which guy they're supposed to take.
Okay.
That assignment football defensively was not good.
Well, we know Utah said how long they've been watching Florida film, right? You know with this quarterback what you're going to get. You're going to get read option. I'm really surprised how our DNs were not better prepared for this, because time after time, unless they were being coached to do so, and if they were, I would love an explanation as to why you would dive at the running back and leave that enormous, fast human being all by himself.
On the edge.
Like, you've lost contain at that point. You've got nothing.
And you teach that stuff in Little League peewee football. That's what was blowing my mind, is basic assignment football that the three of us never played at a high level, but understand basic fundamentals of it. Like, why aren't they doing that?
Yeah, that was shocking how bad. I mean, it was a lot like BYU last year, right? Where it says cage rush. We're going to make sure we keep him in a cage and he can't escape. And they're horrible at it. I mean, at that point, get aggressive. What you're doing is not working. So get after the quarterback and go to him. It was almost like, okay, we got him. We're going to keep him in front. And when he comes to me, I'll tackle him.
Yeah.
Go get the guy.
In my mind, and granted, I'm no X's and O's guy, but in my mind, if you're going to stick with someone, you stick with the quarterback. And if he hands it off, you let the middle or you let the linebackers and safeties come up and get him. But you don't let their quarterback, who's the athlete, go off.
No, and I mean, it just goes, Kyle was pretty non-complimentary to the linebackers.
That's putting it delicately.
And I mean, you go to their 2-point conversion, right? We talked about ours. Well, let's look at theirs. The dude,
it was a busted play that he made look magical.
He did like a triple galooly dance move. It was like a puree, swing around.
A pirouette? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, it's a puree. I mean, he looked like he had a tutu on, and he's just slow motion rotating around while our DNs
fall on their face.
Our two linebackers in Lander Barton and Diabate just whiff. I'm like, Diabate, this is your former teammate. This is your chance to lay a licking on him. Stop jumping and run through the guy.
I mean, that's football 101. Don't jump to block the pass. Hit the dude.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle, the linebackers taking bad angles. They were not aggressive. They were too slow. And I mean, I guess you're going to get that with some youth, right? Lander Barton's a true freshman. Diabate, first time in the program, learning a new offense. You think, as a 2-year starter at Florida, he would have figured of that out.
He was a non-factor.
I mean,
which is disappointing.
He did have 9 total tackles, but I didn't realize that until I looked at the stat sheet, because
nothing stood out.
He was not standing out making plays during the game. But that's going to come, right? Those linebackers are going to get better. This defense in general is going to get better. But I was quite surprised at how pedestrian this defensive line was.
Even Cole Bishop was out of position a couple of times.
So I was going to say,
or looked out of position. I thought
Cole Bishop was the bright spot of the defense.
He did not miss a lot of tackles. He was pretty sure when he got there and finishing the tackle. But he was pretty few and far between.
Maybe I'm just thinking of the play where the running back came out of the backfield and he was the one chasing him down and everybody else was running the other way that they ended up scoring on.
I mean, and overall, like, the secondary was good, not great. Those guys did have a lot, you know, a decent amount of catches. Oftentimes were pretty open when they did make the catch. But I honestly don't have any gripes for the secondary. I thought the safeties were pretty good. I thought the corners were fairly good.
They didn't go at Phillips.
No. Other than that 50-yard run. And he tried to tackle him at the 10 and puree through it.
Well, he was back there playing safety at that point.
Yeah, he was. No, but it was the run game. It was the defensive line and it was the linebackers who were just woof. not a good week for Utah defense and Morgan Scalley. I'm sure it's going to be a rough week for those guys.
I do have a question. How in the world did it go unnoticed that we had a 30-year-old kicker? I did not know that until they put it on the screen.
Oh, you didn't know?
No.
I remember, well, because he was kind of, he was just the kickoff guy, so nobody talks about the kickoff guy last year.
But you think being 30 years old playing college football, that's a story. Noyce is 30 years old.
No.
Yes, he is. Okay, first of all, they talked about it last year in a game, but it was kind of, he doesn't make an impact on the team all that much, so it was kind of a non-story. Now he's your starter. They're going to talk about it a little bit more.
I like, the ball popped off his foot. I think he did a good job. I actually liked the way he kicked.
Well, right through the middle. Both of his field goals were pure.
A 30-year-old kicker as a sophomore from England.
And he's not even getting the Covey treatment yet. He's older than Covey.
By quite a ways.
Well.
But if he was a downhill skier.
So that was my one thing.
And Vele did okay returning punts.
Yeah, you know, he looked sure-handed.
He did.
Especially that one where he caught on the run and got a few 10 to 15 yards after. That was good. I thought he did well.
And our punt, I can only remember one time we punted. Was it more than once?
No, we only punted once, and it was a good punt.
It was a good punt.
It didn't get blocked.
And it wasn't returned for a touchdown. And they never really had any good returns in the kick game, although we couldn't get it to the end zone.
I kept thinking, like, is this planned, or can we not get it to the end zone?
So we had two punts.
Oh, we did have two.
Average of 46 yards.
I only remember the one, the first rugby.
That's what I remember.
One was a touchback, and I did have one touchback.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. Well, you heard it here first, folks.
I guess it's good that things like that are kind of unnoticed and we didn't need to talk about it. It's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, special teams, that's a win for Shaw. They didn't do anything great, but they didn't do anything horrible. So he's just like, nobody's talking about me. Woo-hoo.
Well, every time they kept kicking the kickoff short, I was like, this is a recipe for disaster. We're going to whiff a tackle and boom, they're gone. But they covered it well.
No, special teams, yeah. I mean, it's... critical as I've been of special teams, especially last year, I thought they looked really good and pretty solid.
All right, we can't end this game without talking about the puke of all pukes.
Holy crap. No, puke that kept on puking.
The double puke. I mean, we had the gift from the BYU game last year. Now we got multiple to choose from.
Can one person drink?
This was more violent than last year's. Maybe because it was red, I don't know, but it was.
Although, I'm not sure I've ever seen somebody so calm throwing up before. I mean, it was like he didn't even realize he was throwing up. Like when I throw up,
the entire neighborhood.
I act like I'm being murdered, and he's just like,
I don't know. It must be a pregame nerve jitter type thing because it. He came back in the game shortly after that and played, so it's just like he pukes and he's good to go.
Yeah, it's just like get the nerves out, get rid of all that excess Gatorade in his belly, and let's go.
All right, before we go into Utah and Southern Utah, you know, I kind of mentioned at the beginning about Utah kind of really having the weight of the conference on their shoulders. Oregon gets blown out by Georgia. USC beats Rice, and now they're the darlings of the Pac-12
They're the world beaters now.
It's because the media wants them to be great. Mm-hmm. So they will give them the benefit of the doubt every opportunity they can get.
It's okay. It sets up a great game in October.
So keep their heads growing, right?
Did you guys see the picture of UCLA's stadium?
Oh my gosh. There was no way there were 27,000 people there.
It was the lowest attendance. I thought it was like the lowest attendance ever in UCLA history.
And it was the lowest ticket sold in like since like the 30s. So, not good.
The last time there was a game in that stadium, it was packed.
And we had another heartbreaking loss. I just want to see the Utes win, guys. That's all I want. Well, I've spent all afternoon looking over and doing a little scouting on the Thunderbirds. And I've come to the realization they do play 11 guys on offense and 11 guys on defense.
They're not an 8-man football team.
And we should beat them by 70.
No, I mean, all jokes aside, really, there's not a lot of breakdown. When you play an FCS opponent, there's not much to talk about.
You pay them and you beat them.
Exactly. But knowing what we just saw in game one, what do you guys want to see improvement-wise against an FCS opponent?
Tackling,
scoring every opportunity in the red zone.
And give the ball to the wide receivers.
And get all of your starters out by halftime because you're up 40 points.
It really should be 42 to zip at halftime.
And if it's not, we in the north end zone riot. You hear that, Harlan? Oh, and you know what? If you don't bring back the cannon, we're rioting too. And the drums. Anything else? You guys want to bring anything else back?
All right. Before we close out tonight's podcast, we are going to do our weekly picks. I will go first. I've got Utah winning easily 59-10.
I think Utah. Oh, is it my turn?
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I think Utah's going to put 70 on the board.
Ooh.
I'm going to go 70-3. I just think Utah's got a message to send
to the country,
to the voters.
Now, hopefully we do see those improvements, especially on the defensive side of the ball, with better tackling. But I think Utah will kind of pull it back a little bit. I got Utah 41, SUU 10.
That should be the halftime score.
Boo, you don't believe in the Utes.
Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. That's Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
Yeah, you can find me at UteMan_forever.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast, at our home, UtahManPodcast.com, and anywhere listening to a podcast, we are there, and hopefully Utah gets a big blowout over Southern Utah University, and go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes will be till I die, kayay.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.